It's been 40 years since the original Ghostbusters came out, and here we are in episode number 106 of the Red River Horror Podcast, getting ready to discuss the latest installation to the Ghostbusters saga. That is Ghostbusters with Frozen Empire, coming out on March 22nd. So sit back, relax, and go down those channels of fear on Red River Horror, episode number 106. Welcome back to the Red River Horror Podcast. This is episode number 106. I am your host, Joe Zakreski, joined, as always, by RedRiverHorror.com founder, Eddie Caiazzo. Hey, Ed, how are you?
Joe, it's the sound of my childhood. Do you hear that? The Ecto-1, my favorite car of all time. This even beats out the 1996 Dodge Viper, man. Love that car.
It's between Ecto-1 and the Batmobile for me, but...
Ooh, yeah. No, I get
it's
that.
It's a tough call.
Joe, I'm going to open up with some trivia on you. Do you?
Oh, yeah. I was getting ready. I got fun facts for you, yeah.
Does any of them, pertain to the Ecto-1?
No.
Okay, good.
I don't think so.
All right, so quick trivia, and then you can fire away, all right?
All right.
Do you know what kind of car the Ecto-1 is?
I think it was a hearse.
Do you know what make?
Is it a Lincoln?
It's not. That's a good guess. And don't worry, this isn't a gotcha.
Oldsmobile?
It's not an Oldsmobile, but in the same stable of car ownership.
Plymouth?
It's a 1959 Cadillac Miller Meteor Sentinel. And it's an ambulance.
It was an ambulance. Okay.
How about that?
What a...
Sorry.
Well,
man.
I mean, the whole point is that it's supposed to be like a 50s, like an old beat up car. So they did a good job at that. No, so this is actually our the second time we've discussed Ghostbusters. We did before Ghostbusters Afterlife came out. And we went into that with, you know, hopeful expectations, and we're all pleasantly surprised, found it very enjoyable. And has me looking forward to Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, because bringing back the same cast, it looks like you're going to get more of the original cast in this one. So, and obviously my fingers are very much crossed for more like some Rick Moranis, but he really does not make many appearances. So
that's I totally get it. And yep, just to run through that cast real quick, Joe, because I saw them this morning, they did an exclusive interview. Most of them on CBS this morning. So pretty cool. We have McKenna Grace there. She's the newest addition, playing Egon Spengler's granddaughter. Obviously, we met her in Afterlife. We have Paul Rudd. He was there. You had Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, and Ernie Hudson as Winston, of course. And guess who else?
Bill Murray?
Oh, yeah. Well, Bill Murray was there. I'm talking Annie Potts, man. She's back.
Hey.
Pretty cool.
Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters, what do you want?
Was Carrie Coon there? Or Carrie Coons?
No, on this specific interview, it was Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Paul Rudd, McKenna Grace, Ernie Hudson, and Annie Potts.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean,
that's awesome. Especially having like Annie Potts, you know, cause she does appear in Afterlife, and it's like, oh, hey.
Oh yeah. That's right. I've only seen that in theaters. I got to watch that one before we do a Frozen Empire, man. That was such a good movie.
It's very enjoyable. And then there's some fun names being thrown in there. I heard one rumor, not sure how true it is, but the return of the EPA, Rep Walter Peck making an appearance in this one because we're going back to the city.
Oh, that's awesome. one of the best villains in the first one. I love his interactions with Bill Murray. Oh, man.
Yeah, it's true, sir. This man has no dick.
Oh, that's great. Walter Peck, the EPA guy, back. Huh.
Yeah. And of course, Carrie Coon plays the mom, who I absolutely love because her role in one of my favorite HBO shows that I say is like one of the most underrated shows of all time.
Oh, man. Underrated?
Yeah.
Ugh.
I talk about it a lot on here.
I think I'm gonna lose this round. All right, maybe The Leftovers.
That's what it is.
Oh, sweet. I still don't even know what that's about, but I guessed it right. Yes.
You should watch it. She's fantastic in it.
Wow. That's a depressing one though, right? That's not a Friday. Like, remember we were talking with Steve. I think I gave my gauge as far as like I can't watch The Leftovers on a Friday, so I'll have to figure maybe like midweek on Hump Day when like it's depressing that it's not Friday yet. Maybe on like a Wednesday I'll check out The Leftovers.
Yeah, it's there's parts of that show where I've had to go just take a walk or do something to cheer myself up. It's not a very happy show.
Oh man.
As her character is one of the more depressing ones.
Oh, geez. Well, luckily, she is the daughter of Egon Spengler. So that is pretty darn cool, man.
That is pretty darn cool.
In the movie, of course.
Yeah. Not a bad role.
Mm.
But so that we don't just, so as the last time we talked about Ghostbusters, we just talked about how much we love Ghostbusters, how excited we were for it, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. You just hadn't seen the Paul Feig, the 2016 one.
Still haven't.
Where, once again, we said, it's not really necessary. It's not canon to where this story goes, going from Ivan Reitman's 84 and 89 Ghostbusters 1 and 2 to now Jason Reitman's Afterlife and Frozen Empire.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I did watch the OG Ghostbusters again, and, you know, for 1984, the special effects in there are fantastic.
I thought so, too.
They're really not bad.
No, if you think, I mean, how long did it take George Lucas with the Industrial Light and Magic to get Star Wars like up and running to where the effects, you were like, whoa, you're blown away, especially by the 80s, like The Empire Strikes Back, and then Indiana Jones. Like, you think of all the big special effects films, if you think about it, it's not like Ghostbusters was in that stable as far as like A-list Hollywood back then. So you're right. For those kind of effects to be in that movie, it's funny. Did you watch it on Saturday by any chance?
No.
Okay. I watched it again on Saturday for the first time in a little while, the original Ghostbusters. Yeah. And it seems like even now, like obviously when you're watching it as a kid, it's very different. But even now I'm still picking up on things that I just completely missed.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing about like the comedy stylings, like when you have a guy like Rick Moranis, even Dan Aykroyd, Harold Ramis, a lot of things is about being subtle, quick lines, you know, and that's like, and they just deliver it fantastic every time. So there's definitely a lot of parts that you miss, ton of parts that we missed when we were kids watching it. And then another thing we're talking about, like being kids and Ghostbusters, like Ghostbusters isn't really a horror movie, you know, but it kind of started like the horror comedy. I mean, you could say like Young Frankenstein, but not really. That's just straight up funny. But what I wanted to ask you is like, we've always talked about how creepy the opening scene to the original Ghostbusters is. Do you think that was like one of our gateway drugs into liking scary things or wanting ghost stories and stuff?
Joe, that's a fantastic question. I guess being a little older now, I will say, and if I said this in the previous episode, I apologize, but Ghostbusters for me was the first thing that I was into ever. Like, it was the first thing that I ever had toys. Oh, yeah. Like the action figures, the firehouse. That was like one of the biggest Christmas gifts of all time from my grandma and grandpa, was I went over their house and they had the Ghostbusters firehouse. So I think it might be, Joe. That's a great sourcing there, because there was literally everything, like Ninja Turtles, Power Rangers, all the stuff that came after. I was into nothing before I was into the Ghostbusters. And that was in the early 90s, I guess, when you could start processing that stuff, when the real Ghostbusters cartoon was on and Ecto-1 and the High C. But like all the toys.
Cereals, toys.
Yeah. And the thing is, and that's a great question. And I think you're absolutely right. That had to be the sourcing for it. And if I just think about it a little further, that was what, 91 Ghostbusters 2 came out, I think?
89.
Okay. I was going to say, whenever, so the toys I would have had to start were probably from Ghostbusters 2, like the Trap, the Proton Pack, but I always had Ecto-1. I never had Ecto-2. That was the first thing. And I think that's also why I'll counter. That's a good starting point. Do you enjoy Ghostbusters 2?
Oh, yeah.
I do, too.
Yeah.
Now,
it's different than the first one. So I can understand where the critics come in. But we watched it with young eyes.
We did. And that's the thing. So people I know that love the Ghostbusters, like the original, the 1984, I guess almost 40 years old now. The people that watch that movie do not like Ghostbusters 2. They really don't. And I think that it's our age and younger that actually are just like, no, that's not a bad movie. I enjoy that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing. So someone who's maybe like 10 years older than you and I would say something like that. And then it would also say that they don't like Return of the Jedi. I think a lot of people forget that, like, the Ewoks were treated like gunk, like the way like Jar Jar Binks was. there's a lot of people who don't like Return of the Jedi. Well, they like it because it ends the trilogy, but there's a lot of Ewok haters.
Wow.
But here's the thing. In Ghostbusters 2, I think just because it caters so much to a younger crowd and it's more goofy. Yeah, I mean,
would you say that was your gateway drug? The opening jump scare in Ghostbusters 1984, the original, was that, would you say that was like, for me?
Oh, yeah.
What, you brought it up and I'm like, you know what? Probably. So for you as well.
Yeah, 100%.
Wow.
The opening to Ghostbusters. And then there's also a Disney movie called The Great Mouse Detective, which features Vincent Price. As the villain, and yeah, he's a very creepy guy and does creepy things. I think it's the only Disney movie where something gets killed on purpose.
Oh, man.
So to give you some context, Vincent Price plays a rat called Ratigan.
Okay.
Clever. And he hates being a rat. He thinks he's like the king of the mice. He's like a mob boss, and he has a cat that's like his enforcer.
Uh-huh.
And he has his mob crew of mice, and one of them doesn't make him happy, so he feeds it to the cat. And you actually see the cat pick it up, like the silhouette and the shadow, pick it up and eat it.
Oh, man.
So, I don't know any other like Disney cartoon movie that has a kill in it.
That's, I mean, Bambi, but that's...
Malice. Well, you don't
that's
see
not
it.
Malice. That's not like... that's the... Yeah. Wow. Ooh. Because I'm not the biggest Disney fan, so I wouldn't have gone back to that one. That's pretty dark.
It is a really dark, like, 80s Disney got a little dark, but it's a play on like Sherlock Holmes. And he also has, like, there's also a jump scare in it in the beginning that used to scare the crap out of my brother. So it was like his favorite movie, but he would have to be like, go and hide when he knew it was coming, and yeah. I'd have to let him know when it was over.
Those were the days, man.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, there's a ton of, and just back to Ghostbusters, so much nostalgia. Like when I was a kid, I had to bring my proton pack with me to things. So like if I was going over to my aunt and uncle's house, I had, my cousin Trevor had the trap.
Yes.
So I was like, all right, like I only had the pack. I didn't have the trap. So he had the trap. And then on my other side of the family, you know, I have two cousins, two male, like three, we're all the same age, but two that are boys that were into Ghostbusters as well, John and Mike. And we all had our packs. Mike actually had the slime pack.
Wow.
And a trap. So we really mixed it up. And another fun fact is my cousin John's wife, Brittany, who's the actual designer for the re-release of the Proton pack for Spirit Halloween.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's awesome. That's right. We got to catch up with her and the good folks at Spirit over there in New Jersey. They're doing some awesome stuff, keeping our fall season afloat with beautiful things like the Ghostbusters. Yeah,
not far.
No. That's awesome. Yo, you're right. And it's so funny thinking back to the toys. That's right. It's all what everybody else had. Because like nobody had everything. I knew two people that I knew when I was younger that had everything. But yeah, like it took a while to acquire all those things too. So when you got the proton pack, now did yours have the foam blast? So you put the foam piece in it. It almost looked like a pool noodle out in front of the gun. Okay. So that.
And like you pulled the trigger and it's
like. Yes. Yep. But I didn't have a trap for a while. I think I ultimately got one a few years down the line. And then there were two, cause you know, my dad, like he bought one for me that was like the trap that you open. And then he bought another one that was the sound. Like, I think going back to like Kmart, because one was to save as a collector's item, you know?
Yeah. That's an NFT of the 90s, you could say, or the crypto of the 90s.
That's right. One to play with, one to save.
Yeah. But you know what? I mean, honestly, like if he still has it, I bet it goes for something.
That's the thing, man. When I sold my Power Rangers toys, I had no idea. I was just fresh out of college, broke, and I started selling some Power Rangers toys. Dude, I sold a lot of the second generation, not even the first one, the one that we watched. The second generation, I ended up getting like $400 for the old, like, you had all the weapons that you put together and that made the big blaster. So I had that. I had like a, there was some kind of dragon thing from the movie or whatever. I had this random Power Ranger stuff and literally it was like $400 is what I netted in these old toys. So yes, I have to look. We should do some digging on treasures from the Ghostbuster realm, because I'm sure there are a lot of them.
Nah, I should have called Steve. It's because he's in tune with that, with like he knows how to search it real quick.
Yeah,
I get the answer.
Well, yeah. Question for you on this Frozen Empire. So obviously a great return to form. This could have been really bad when they did Afterlife. So obviously Ivan Reitman did the first one, or directed the first one. So Jason Reitman brought it back with Afterlife, you know, ignoring the one in the middle, the 2016 one. So now you have Frozen Empire and it's directed by Gil Keenan. He's also credited as one of the writers. So Gil Keenan, Jason Reitman, Ivan Reitman credited as writers. Gil Keenan, the director, and I just want to go through some of the films that he's done. He directed Monster House, which I think was a good kids movie. That was 2006. City of Ember. I've never heard of that, but he did the 2015 Poltergeist, Joe. That's one of the ones he directed. He directed an episode in the Scream TV series. So I don't know. That 2015 Poltergeist is pretty maligned. So So do you think that now that you're taking Jason Reitman, who was so meticulous, like so sure that he was going to give us a product that really rang true, give us that nostalgia, give us that like action, give us the comedy. Yeah. That Ghostbusters is known for. Do you think that this Gil Keenan will deliver?
I mean, he's got Paul Rudd, so.
It's true. Yeah, right.
I think that's, you know, a nice piece to have.
Yeah.
But, yeah, based on his resume, it looks like they're looking for someone who can make a, you know, direct a cross, something that's good for anybody from like N and up mm-hmm. will enjoy it.
Yeah.
So it looks like the production's huge. And the first one, well, Afterlife, we could say, was a really nice tribute to Harold Ramis at the same time. And now they've got themselves Egon's off their back, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
That's addressed and covered. And this is where they can move on and see where they can go with it.
Yeah, we can kind of see this new generation. So you have Finn Wolfhard, McKenna Grace, as, mm-hmm. You have the kids and the mom now and Paul Rudd. And now you can kind of like, yes, that's we got the story. We know what happens to Egon. It was a great tribute.
Yeah.
And now here we are. Now this new group is going out to fight more ghosts.
Yep. And all I'm hoping for is, just a fun ride. And I'm pretty confident that's what we're going to get. The only thing that I also feel is like once this is successful, this, they'll definitely try and move on from the originals. And then there'll be like a Ghostbusters expanded universe.
There's always an expanded universe.
There's always an expanded universe. Like if this is a big hit, then it's going to it's going to spawn into something that gets annoying, a la Star Wars. So
yeah, and
or Marvel, like where you're just pumping out content after content. I hope not, but I just have a feeling like if this is a big success, that's what's going to happen.
It's funny you say that. I don't know if you knew. I think you do. Godzilla Minus One just won an Oscar, mm-hmm. the special effects. And I was so happy for that team. And I was just reading, to be honest, it had a very short window that we could see it because it was only in theaters. Yep. And now it's not even getting an overseas home video release until like May. So it's going to be a while till we can watch Godzilla Minus One. But one of the things that a few critics and a few people that covered the Oscars were saying is they just focused on delivering a good movie. Like the team's focus was not to say like, even this is like a Godzilla movie. This is, they could easily take that character and that world and just make something run of the mill in the way that Marvel's been doing recently. But, now that the old, generation one or what are they, phases? Is that what they call them, Marvel phases? So now that the phase with Robert Downey Jr. is done, now the movies have been crap. At least I've heard. I can't say that I've watched them. But you could easily take Godzilla, and it's Toho's property, and do whatever you want. They apparently made a really, really good movie. Just the special effects, the story, the human story. I mean, it's apparently pretty heavy, and that's what they set out to do, and it's... If that's what we're working with, we're just setting out people finally making a good movie before the inevitable expanded universe comes along, then, we're still sitting good here with Dan Aykroyd and Ernie Hudson and Bill Murray. Like it's they're still hanging on.
They are still hanging on. Now, here's the thing. If we go back into the original Ghostbusters, before I get into that, just I want to say how disappointed I am that I didn't see Godzilla Minus One in theaters because it was like so high up on my list, but just couldn't make it happen.
Yeah.
I hate being an adult. I hate having responsibilities. It really takes away from all my fun.
Yes.
So when we're talking about the original Ghostbusters cast, what do you think it would have been like had Eddie Murphy accepted and played the role of Winston Zeddemore? Like, how different of a movie do you think it really would have been?
It would have been very different. I don't know if, just chronologically, I just don't know how big he was in 84. But I feel like if he was Winston.
He's big.
All right, so if he was Winston, then all of a sudden the movie becomes all about him. Eddie Murphy's one of my favorite people in entertainment. Like, I don't know anybody that does it better than Eddie Murphy. I mean, just comedy, just all around. I love Eddie Murphy, but he would have been that would have literally taken away from everything else. It would have been all about his jokes and what situation he found himself in, like that kind of thing. I think.
Yeah. Well, I'll put it this way: so he did have good chemistry with Dan Aykroyd because in '83 was when Trading Places was released.
Set in Philly, shot in Philly.
Yep.
Yeah.
So he was their first choice, and he turned it down. He did Beverly Hills Cop, which was also a huge success, which also has a sequel coming out with him in it this year.
Oh, wow.
At some point. So it was interesting while I was reading and how the script, when it was originally written, was written for him to be Winston Zeddemore. And when he turned it, and he would have been in it from the jump. Right. Like, he would have been hired as soon as they started their own business, like with Janine.
Right.
Okay. And that's how fast they were going to introduce him.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So you get more of a delay with Ernie Hudson. And I kind of like Ernie Hudson a little better because he's more of a straight man.
Absolutely. Just
like, if it comes with a steady paycheck, I'll believe anything you say.
Yeah.
You know.
No.
So it's like.
And Winston's just, he's so iconic. Like, I don't know why. It's a bit of a throwaway scene. Not a throwaway scene, but when him and Dan Aykroyd are in the car crossing I'm sorry, my New York friends, I'm not familiar with the bridges. I know it's not the Brooklyn Bridge, but they're driving on one of the bridges. It's just, for me and Ghostbusters, it's an iconic scene. That conversation he has with Dan Aykroyd, it's just, yeah, no, I can't imagine it being anybody else but Ernie Hudson.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, he's Winston. So it would have been something. And another funny thing, when we talk about how we see Ghostbusters through, you know, we watched it with younger eyes. You know, we knew Slimer as Slimer. And it didn't really hit me until, again, I was like looking for fun little tidbits. It's like, you know, they never say his name in the movie.
No.
Like, they're not, oh, it was a Slimer. They're like, no, it was a Vaporeous whatever phantom. Like, so it was the cartoon that named him Slimer because now he's part of the gang.
Right.
In the real Ghostbusters. And also, shout out to, what was the other one with the more, with the mix Ghostbusters group? It's like the Next Generation Ghostbusters had the one in the wheelchair through an. The more mixed group of Ghostbusters cartoon.
Oh, man. All right. This is going back. I'm going to have to look this up, Joe. So
yeah,
forgive me.
That's fine.
The real Ghostbusters.
I was like, I wasn't planning on talking about that, but otherwise I was going to say the fun things I found about Slimer is that they had him written down as Onion Head as a reference in the notes.
That's great.
And that Dan Aykroyd came up with that ghost as the ghost of John Belushi.
Oh, okay.
So I'm like, that's pretty funny.
Wow, so here's something crazy. Arsenio Hall played Winston Zeddemore from seasons 1 to 3 on The Real Ghostbusters. That's pretty cool.
Woo, 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 woo.
Yeah.
I don't even know if Arsenio references even make sense anymore. Do you remember those?
I some of them, yeah.
You gotta go way back to woo 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 woo. Pump your fist. No.
All right. So obviously Peter Venkman, Egon Spengler, Ray Stantz, Winston Zeddemore, Janine, Louis Tully. That was Rick Moranis' character. So I don't know. Charlie Adler played Raphael, Jeff Altman, Professor Norman Dweeb. I'm looking for a picture of this crew. I can't tell who is, like what, all right, where's a still picture of this? No, it looks like there's four of them and Slimer. So, and just talking to Slimer's appeal at the start of the fourth season, 1988, the show was retitled to Slimer and the Real Ghostbusters. It aired in a 1-hour time slot, which the show had begun doing under its original name earlier that same year on January 30th, 1988. In addition to the regular 30-minute Real Ghostbusters episode, a half-hour Slimer subseries was added that included 2 to 3 short animated segments focusing on the character Slimer. So, yeah, that's, I guess, where he got his title, because you're right. In the first one, he's not named.
No. That's where it comes from. So I was like, oh, that's interesting. Like, the notes had him, it was like Onion Head. Yeah. And then Dan Aykroyd later said that is based on John Belushi.
That's so good.
Yeah, just slamming food and being crazy.
Yep.
So I get it.
And the funny thing sense. Is, Slimer is, I love it too, because like Slimer isn't even that nice. So everybody's perception of Slimer is this like hilarious, you know, from the second one on, where he's wearing the hat and he's riding the bus and he's cool and all that stuff. It's like, no, like he's not friendly, at least in the first one.
No, he's friendly in the real Ghostbusters. He gives Rick Moranis a ride in the second one.
Okay, but I don't know if you have your license.
And he is in Extreme Ghostbusters. That's the name of the cartoon I was thinking about, which was from like 1997.
Ooh.
And it only aired one season, but that was at like the time where cartoons had like 40 episodes.
Oh, so it was a long season.
So you can go back and just like look up a cartoon from your childhood and you'll see that'll be like one or two seasons, but each season is 40 or more episodes because it was designed for every single day.
Wow.
Not once a week.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So pretty wild stuff.
That's a big chunk. Hmm.
Yeah. And my brother and I really enjoyed watching that one together. So Extreme Ghostbusters. Yeah, maybe someday I'll go back and take a look at it.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out. I can't say that I'm familiar with Extreme Ghostbusters, but it does look like there's... No, unless that's Janine. So you got Ray, Slimer, some chick with blue hair, some guy. There is a black guy. I'm guessing that's got to be Winston, right? And then
no.
The guy with glasses. No, what is going on? Yeah, no.
No, so it's only Egon is the original, and he's their mentor.
Oh, okay.
So, like, Egon is at the firehouse. Egon's the one who trained all of them. Egon's the one with the information. Similar to how, like, Batman Beyond worked, where Bruce Wayne just stays at the Batcave and Wayne Manor.
Yeah. All right. That makes sense. And it was good. You and your brother watched it and enjoyed it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was one of our regulars. It's a little Extreme Ghostbusters, little gargoyles in there, you know.
All the good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
now let's
quickly.
Here's another. Whoop. What do you got?
The Batman the Animated Series. I actually liked that a lot. Pretty dark. That show.
Very dark.
Batman Beyond. Was that any good?
I loved it.
Okay.
I thought it was really because it picks up from Batman the Animated Series.
Oh wow. All right. You know? That's probably worth checking out then. All right.
Yeah. I mean, if you really miss Batman the Animated Series and want some new stuff, like one, you can watch it, but you could also, if you haven't seen the movies, watch the movies that are based off the graphic novels.
Okay. All right. So, good to know. Sorry. I didn't mean to take us off course. Thank you.
No, all good. So here's another fun fact. Like in Ghostbusters, the original, when they say the hotline, 555-2368, that number was active. And it played an automated message. So they released it as part of the marketing campaign. So here's things that we missed. And callers would hear a pre-recorded message from Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd, who announced that they were unable to answer the phone as they were busy busting ghosts. That's pretty neat.
Yeah, that's... Oh, man. You hear about those things. It's like, it's such a time past, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you know of any... I'm sure one of these Marvel movies had to do something like that. Like, do you know of anything more modern that they provided you a number within the material and then you called it and something happened?
Yeah. There's a few things that did that. But I'm trying to think movie wise, because the one... I don't want to say it out loud, but it was the one where it was like the hotline, the hater hotline. It was like, bitch, fuck you. Like,
oh, okay. The joke.
Hundreds of are waiting for you, motherfucker.
What?
You want to talk shit? Call me. That number actually worked.
Wow.
That guy, he's a comedian. And like, that's where he made that video. And you could call his 1-800 number. I don't know if it's still active, but it was pretty active. not too long ago. I'm really drawing a blank. There's another one, and I cannot think of it for the life of me, that was from a movie or TV show. And it's like the number on screen. It's like, wait, and it wasn't a 555. And that's where I was like, wait a minute, that's not a 555. That's a real phone number. And then it actually worked.
Mm-hmm.
And it just plays a message. So it's like same gag.
All right. Now I have a question, a little more of an adult question, but you know, we know this podcast isn't made for kids. So
yeah,
I have an adult question here. So I forgot to pay attention during the part where the song is playing and Ray drifts off into the dream world. Right. So the song Ghostbusters is playing and you have the part where the ghost starts undoing his pants. Right. Do you think the line in the song Ghostbusters, Ray Parker Jr., do you think that line where they say "Bustin' makes me feel good"? Do you think that that's a, do you think that is sexual? Like that is a joke within the song that like you obviously would not pick up on that as a kid. You would have no idea.
It very well could be. I don't know.
I just didn't know if you knew.
I mean, that's the first thing that comes to mind for you.
It just cracks me up. Because I was looking, I forgot when I went into watching this, the Ghostbusters on Saturday, I wanted to look to see if at that point where that's happening, if that line came up and it's just like, okay, that would complete the joke. I guess we'll never know. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's like the thing is like they're comedic actors like Dan Aykroyd, like they were comedy people, so they know how to, like, we watched a completely different movie when we were younger, when we saw Ghostbusters for the first time, than we do now. Now it's just like, okay. So I know it's a small piece of it, but I could totally see one of them just saying, throw this in there.
Did they write the lyrics for it, or was it all Ray Parker Jr.? I don't know if that's in, like... I don't know where in our language did Bustin, has that always been
there? It was written by Ray Parker Jr. Yes, the song was written and released on Arista Records. So yes. So I don't know. So yeah, okay, maybe I should have looked that up first. But the music video was directed by Ivan Reitman as well.
Nice.
So that's cool.
Nice. And we got Bobby Brown for the second one.
Oh, yeah. And I love that freaking song. Not the main theme, but there's a song called On Our Own by Bobby Brown.
Yeah, I remember I bought the single at the record store on vinyl.
Do you still have that?
I don't think so. I think I gave it away or traded it.
Man, that was such a good song. On Our Own.
Well, I guess we're gonna have to take control.
Oh man, that's such a good song. Ray Parker, but yeah, Ghostbusters is a classic. If that's not on your Halloween playlist every year, there's something wrong with you.
You're messed up in the head.
It's un-American.
So go see a doctor.
Yeah. What does your dad say? If somebody puts ketchup on a hot dog, he says, that's un-American.
That's un-American.
If Ghostbusters is not on your playlist, the Ray Parker Jr. song, you're un-American.
You're un-American. Yeah. Get out of here. Go to Russia.
Yeah, right.
Man. Where would you say is the horror equivalent to Ghostbusters? Like, how has there not been something more of a parody or a knockoff? And the closest thing I can come up with is the Conjuring universe, the Ghostbusters of the horror realm. It's like Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Maybe, but I guess...
Not quite.
Because it's not their intent. Are you saying... I want to actually... correct something. There was a question you asked in the last episode. I feel like I'm going to do this. I'll be correcting myself now every episode. There was a question you asked about, like, is anybody kind of been robbed in like the horror genre? And I kind of went on this tangent about Resident Evil. There was something I wanted to add to that, to what, mm-hmm. the question that you asked. I thought James McAvoy was fantastic in Split in 2017.
Oh, yeah.
I think he completely got gypped from Oscar contention. Like, I don't understand why he wasn't in the running for his role in Split. So I misunderstood your question last time. I just wanted to correct the record. You said, did somebody just get robbed or something you felt that wasn't up to snuff? And yeah, like James McAvoy should have been nominated for an Oscar for his acting performance in Split. So
yeah, I agree with that. But I think M. Night kind of, he's been thrown down. I don't think he gets he can make a phenomenal movie and it's not going to get the recognition it deserves. Yeah. He like peaked too soon.
Yeah.
With The Sixth Sense, because The Sixth Sense got a ton of love. And then everything else after that's been met with mixed, and he just does his own thing.
Yeah, he
Maybe
does.
That's where it hurt him.
No, that's fine. But that's criminally underrated, just awesome performance there. So I just want to understand your question. So like the equivalent, and you brought up Ed and Lorraine Warren. Are you saying like, so how I interpreted your question here is that like, are we thinking parody? Like a parody of the horror genre.
Like, yeah, how do we not have a horror movie of someone capturing ghosts?
Right.
It's out there. Hmm. Does 13 ghosts count?
I'd have to go.
They're already captured.
Yeah.
So kinda?
You could say that, yeah. I guess in 13 Ghosts is now a little older now, right? Was that late 90s?
It's 20 years old by this point.
And I mean, and that gets a lot of retro love, and it always makes Fear Fest on AMC. I don't know. But there's a lot of, just like with Ghost Ship. So 13 Ghosts is looked back on fondly. I don't know. I guess, maybe the Conjuring universe for right now. I'll have to give it some more thought. Sorry.
No, it's just... Give it some thought. Such a unique thing. And just in a world where everything seems like it's been redone, remade over and over again, or parodied, how is there not a full-on, like, spooky version of Ghostbusters?
Well, I think Jason Reitman did a great job in the tone that he set in Ghostbusters Afterlife, because it had the heart, even to an extent. Like, if you think about Ghostbusters, the original, that was funny and scary, and it was just a great cast. Very creative, a cool story. I think what Jason did with Afterlife really added that layer of heart to the Ghostbusters story. And it was just like, it was a different tone. You know, so I think that moving forward, I don't know, like it kind of has, like Ghostbusters kind of has heart now that we've been there. Like, we traveled through two movies with, you know, the big four that we know and love. And then we get Afterlife, and it's kind of like the next generation. But it was a passing of the torch that was done with a lot of heart. I don't know the point I'm trying to make. I'm just,
you know? No, you got it. You got it. Yeah, it's. There's no reason to not be looking forward to Frozen Empire, and I don't want to speculate, but I feel like we're gonna get hit with more nostalgia slaps, which is fine. As we mentioned, Mr. Peck, or is it called Mr. Pecker? It's not Pecker. It's Peck.
That's a good one though. That's how you do comedy right to me though. There's a difference in like all the winks and nods and all the stuff. Then you're just like, oh, did you see that? Did you see that? Mm-hmm. And then there's that guy showing up in this movie to probably be on screen and do battle with Peter Venkman again. I love it. I love that prospect.
Some kind of, we're going to get it, hopefully get an exchange. So, and again, my fingers, my toes, everything's crossed for Rick Moranis to appear, but doesn't seem likely, because he just really does not appear too often.
He's a very private guy now.
Can't blame him.
Nope. So Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, check it out. Just wanted to read the synopsis before we got out of here.
Throw it out there.
This is what they put out. When the discovery of an ancient artifact unleashes an evil force, Ghostbusters, new and old, must join forces to protect their home and save the world from a second ice age. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There you go.
I mean, it sounds good to me.
Yep. Oh, we'll be there.
It sounds good to me. Oh, yeah.
We will be. This is a theater one if I've ever saw one.
For sure. Yeah, I don't want to miss that one. So we'll be making our way to a theater. Which one? Who knows?
Mm-hmm. March 22nd, the release date of the newest Ghostbusters. Yeah. Can't wait, Joe. This is going to be fun. And again, I think we said before, we already did one after Afterlife. We're doing this kind of in preparation for Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. So maybe we'll give our boats rating on the next episode of the next, or I guess the immediate one following,
when it comes out and after we watch it.
Yep. So, yeah. But I won't go down a rabbit hole. We can talk about it for like 5 minutes. We'll boat it and then we'll move on.
Sounds like a plan. And also if anybody listening wants to throw in any fun facts, Ghostbusters thoughts, shoot them over to us either through social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or you can always email us at redriverhorror@gmail.com. Give us some of your thoughts, some of your opinions, or even after you see the new movie, or any horror movie for that matter, just send it in and we'll discuss whatever the heck it is you said.
Indeed. Well, Joe, yeah. Thank you for that. Yep. At Red River Horror, redriverhorror@gmail.com. I guess I'll let you take it away, Joe.
Yeah, thank you, Eddie. This has been episode number 106 of the Red River Horror Podcast. So thank you so much for joining us. And remember to keep traveling those channels of fear.